Now, this is the Space Show, which this evening has several supernatural references, the first of which is coming right now. Welcome to the Space Show, presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I am Andrew Rennie. On this evening's The Space Show, the death of another Apollo veteran. So we'll begin with Space Show news. Apollo 8 astronaut Bill Anders was killed at the weekend when the aeroplane he was piloting crashed at high speed into water. Dick Jonas has this song about the varied life of this aviator.
His name is Bill Anders, a daring young man. If it needs flying, Bill Anders can. Came out of squid school and then pretty soon young William Anders flew off to the moon. Born in Hong Kong, far over the sea, looked up at the sky, said that's for me. Signed up with the Air Force to hedge all his bets. Bill got his wish and was soon flying jets. In the F-89 and the F-101, he chased Russian bombers neath the cold northern sun. He's flown it all, jets, rockets, and props. Some even tell me that he's flown wop-wops. Well, he got his chance in 1963. He learned how to fly the LLTV. The moon was the mission for Bill and his crew. They wanted to find out just what he could do. 1968, just about Christmas time, the rocket fired up and it started its climb. The engines were roaring a thunderous tune. Bill, Frank, and Jimmy were off to the moon. They watched it roll by, 98 miles below. They saw the Earth rise, what a wonderful show. Read from the good book to the people on Earth, midwife the moment of the new frontier's birth. Astronaut, statesman, and businessman too, there just ain't nothing Bill Anders can't do. He's a wonderful guy, and I'm glad he's my friend. The country owes much to this man among men. You'll find him at Reno or some other rare patch, flying Valhalla or the big Wampus Cat. On the wing of an A-10 or another hot jet, Bill just won't quit, he's still flying yet. Bill Anders won't quit, he's still flying yet.
That was Dick Jonas with the life history of Apollo 8 astronaut Bill Anders. And we say life history because Bill died when he crashed his aircraft into the ocean whilst doing low-altitude aerobatics. Bill only flew one spaceflight, which was the first human mission to orbit the moon. His crew members on Apollo 8 were Frank Borman and Jim Lovell. Several years ago, Bill Anders gave an oral history in which he described how his first experience as a capsule communicator during the Gemini 8 emergency affected his response to a seemingly similar emergency as Apollo 8 neared the Earth on its return to the moon. Return from the moon.
On Gemini 8, I'd been assigned as one of the capsule communicators. This was the first time I'd ever done that job, which we called CAPCOM. And early into the flight, I took over from Jim Lovell. It seems to me it was late at night. The mission had been a little boring, almost. The spacecraft was up there somewhere over the Soviet Union. And I don't remember exactly what Jim or I said. It was sort of a quick status report, but nothing memorable. And Jim left. No sooner had Jim gotten out of the building when we had contact with the spacecraft, but immediately knew that there was a problem. The spacecraft was spinning out of control. The spin was accelerating. The crew didn't know why. They knew they had some kind of stuck thruster, but they didn't know which thruster. There was a lot of them. They were docked with the Agena rocket. It could have been a thruster stuck on the Agena, and indeed Neil Armstrong jumped to the relatively logical conclusion that since everything had been okay up to the docking and they had just docked, that it was probably something wrong with the Agena. So he undocked. As soon as he did, the spacecraft began to accelerate in its motion, which meant that without the Agena mass there, now the thruster must have been on the spacecraft. And they had great difficulty isolating where the problem was. They turned everything off, but they were still spinning. And so after quite a bit of confusion, justifiable confusion, both in the air and on the ground, they were able to stabilize the spacecraft by selectively turning thrusters on and off to find which one was stuck. They isolated the stuck one, brought the spacecraft back under control, but they had used a lot of their attitude control fuel. And because of this, they backed into a mission rule that said when your attitude control fuel gets such and such low, then we have to have a recovery because we can't afford to let the spacecraft go any longer. So suddenly, I was counting them down to a re-entry, you know, out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. No ships to speak of, no aircraft carrier standing by. So this was quite a baptism in fire to me, and fortunately, they floated around there for quite some time and were picked up by a destroyer. But this experience stuck in my mind and actually came back and related to another problem that we had on Apollo 8. Well, on Apollo 8, we were coming back from the moon. Frank Borman had gone to get some sleep. I was flying to the degree you can fly a spacecraft falling down from the moon, flying the spacecraft. Jim Lovell was down in the navigation bay doing star sightings to test the navigation equipment. We really didn't use the navigation equipment on board for that first flight out to the moon. And Jim, in his haste, hit the wrong button on the computer, which caged the gyro, which sent the attitude reference system to zero, which lined it up with the spacecraft, where it was supposed to be lined up with, you know, the universe. And so I suddenly saw the attitude ball in front of me starting to move. Coincidentally, one of the thrusters fired that was taking care of the attitude of the spacecraft. And I jumped to the conclusion that, oh my God, we've got a stuck thruster, just like Gemini 8. So I came in with a hand controller in the opposite way to counteract this thruster, and was trying to take the movement out. I couldn't do it, so I came in with more. Actually, what was happening was the ball was just moving inside the instrument panel on its own. The spacecraft had been, up until that moment, perfectly neutral until I put the thrust in. And then I saw that the shafts of light from the sun hitting little dust motes in the air was moving. So that further convinced me that we had a stuck thruster, came in with more thrust. Frank Borman woke up about this time, what the hell's going on? He said, I think we got a stuck thruster. And then I realized that the light was rotating the wrong way for this thruster being stuck. And by this time, the ball had now zeroed out. And then I realized, oops, it was because of this caging of the gyro system that made it look like a stuck thruster a la Gemini 8, but really wasn't. So we quickly brought the spacecraft back under stability, but we didn't know where in the hell we were with attitude. And poor Jim Lovell, of course, was being debriefed by Frank pretty thoroughly by this time. You couldn't see very many stars because sunlight was reflecting off water and urine crystals that were microscopic but floating around the spacecraft. And so it was very difficult for us to reorient the reference system, which had to be done because we were about 24 hours out from reentry. And if you reentered with the wrong attitude, the wrong spacecraft attitude, you could skip out or dig in, and that was both lethal results. But fortunately, Jim's sharp eyes and a little help from the ground, we managed to shoot a few stars and eventually stumble on the right combination, and the computer said, yay, verily, we know where we are now. But that stemmed from Gemini 8.
The memories of Bill Anders, dead at the age 90, doing what he loved doing, flying. His crewmate, Frank Borman, died aged 95 in November last year, and Jim Lovell is still alive, aged 96.
You'll find him at Reno or some other rare patch, flying Valhalla or the big Wampus Cat, on the wing of an A-10 or another hot jet. Bill just won't quit, he's still flying yet. Bill Anders won't quit, he's still flying yet.